This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Here comes the pressure from D.C. Throw it to the left. It's picked off. Intercepted. Bradley Sill down the sideline for another pick six for the D.C. Defenders.
In the end, the D.C. Defenders win the first ever XFL game, 31-19.
Out of the pocket is Walker. Wide open is Mobley again. This time they connect. Touchdown, Roughnecks.
And this week, if you're a Houston Roughneck fan, it's the kneel down. P.J. Walker, June Jones, and the Roughnecks will win their first game here in the XFL, 37-17 over the Los Angeles Wildcats.
Herb Lawrence.
Yeah, did you ever Herbie Lawrence sighting at all today?
I did see him today.
Yeah,
he was down a couple of booths.
And Rick Camp.
Oh, Solo Mio, that's Rick Camp in the Score Studios in downtown Chicago.
On 670 The Score, Chicago's sports station.
This hour is brought to you by Way Back In, the highlights from ESPN and Fox yesterday from... It's weird to say, to open a show, the XFL is here. Welcome in. I'm Rick Camp alongside Herb Lawrence. We're here with you until noon. We got a busy morning. We're going to spend a lot of this first hour going over what we saw on the field, on the broadcast of the XFL. And if nothing else, it seemed encouraging.
I was very surprised that, firstly, I went into yesterday not wanting to see the game. Mm-hmm. But I remember at 1 o'clock, I was like, okay, they're on. Let me give it a try before I poo-poo the whole thing. And I came away surprised. It's like, this is not bad football. Not good football, necessarily.
Right.
But the broadcast, Steve Levy on the call, something about that game, that first game, the D.C. Defenders versus the Seattle team, who, by the way, looked like FAMU. It was weird.
Yes, they did.
And
Seattle Dragons?
Yeah, Seattle Dragons, led by Jim Zorn. I was not turning that TV off. I had to go somewhere and be at a place at 4 o'clock. But I remember, I was like, man, I am interested in this game.
Yeah.
It's 4th and 1. What are they going to do? I love the three-pointer you can go for the touchdown.
After
the touchdown. It just, they've done exactly what they need to do this time in the XFL. They learned their mistakes from the first attempt. And, you know, they're kind of like, we're anti-NFL. We're the alternative. If you don't like the NFL, come to us type of thing.
Sure.
With the first iteration of this. Now they're like, you know what? We're not anti-NFL. We're just after the NFL, you need some football?
Yeah.
Here you go.
Yeah, NFL adjacent.
Yeah, here's some guys that, you know, are not good enough for the NFL, but are good enough for our league. It's hopefully developed into a minor league system for the NFL because there's nothing I love more than having people I recognize, like, Cardale Jones in that first game. Evan Rodriguez, former Bear great. And seeing them do things that they didn't get the chance to do in the NFL. So, yeah, it was a entertaining 3 hours for me when I watched the first game. I did not get to see the second game as always. I told you, I was at a soccer event. It was great. Black Fires, shout out.
It's kind of a little the Black Fires?
Yeah,
so that's what they're going by? Okay.
Black people who love fire, the Fire, the Chicago Fire.
The Chicago Fire.
Not the actual TV show,
the soccer
team that's going to be playing at Soldier Field this year.
Exactly.
Get your tickets now.
So we're going to do a lot of that in this first hour. 10 o'clock, we're going to switch over to the White Sox. James Fox from Future Sox is going to come on. The White Sox have an agreed-to contract for a July 2nd international signing. That's kind of a big deal. Other things in the works. Also, just we're right at about time. Pitchers and catchers are about to report.
Yes.
And then at 11 o'clock, we'll switch back to the XFL. Kevin Boylard covers the NFL for CBS Sports, but if you were following him on Twitter at 24/7, Kevin Boylard, a lot of XFL tweets yesterday, and just someone else to bounce ideas off of, because we've got a lot of stuff just interesting from the way the game's played, the way the broadcast is done, that we want to get to there. And then I may, shocking to probably nobody, want to sneak in an NBA thought or two before we get out of here at noon.
I mean, it's February, Rick, so it's sports hell, kind of, for sports talk radio
for
people.
Not for me. I could tell, you know, NBA season's going. I'm happy. I tried watching some college basketball yesterday.
You tried?
It's really bad.
Well, you tried to watch the ACC, right? If you had gotten to some Big Ten, you have been in.
Sure.
It's a great conference. Michigan State game, baby. Let's go.
I honestly don't even remember which game it was now, because I watched it for like, I watched for like five minutes.
Kansas TCU?
It might have been. Might have been.
Yeah, that game got really interesting at the end, and then Kansas took over because they are dominating. Jamie Dixon, I don't know why he went to TCU. I know money, but whatever.
Yeah.
But it usually is a sports hell. Like, after the Super Bowl, you have really nothing to talk about.
Right.
I know you hockey fans are like, yeah, the Blackhawks are close to a playoff spot. The Bulls are still the Bulls. And then you're waiting for that pitchers and catchers report thing. But this year, that XFL gives you a nice break, gives you a nice bridge to when they play games in March.
Yeah, like
for baseball.
Yeah, real baseball. So I've got a thought on that a little bit later. I'll probably share that in like the 10 o'clock hour.
But and with the XFL, we have a vested interest because the Score's own, Greg Gabriel, is what, player personnel developer or director?
Yeah.
So he's the DC defender, and they look strong. Yeah, Cardale Jones, baby.
Yeah, when you look at like where there's actual like real talent, it sure looks like that team has a lot of it. So we want your thoughts as well on the XFL. How much of it did you watch? What drew you to it? 312-644-6767, 670-11 on the text line. And the text zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at rosenhyundai.com. I kind of want to start with this tweet from Bernstein and McKnight football season regular Sage Rosenfels, at Sage Rosenfels 18 on Twitter. He said, so basically the XFL is the talent of the second half of NFL preseason games thrown into a fun league with experimental rules, smaller soccer stadiums, and sweet uniforms. Count me in. And I think that's, yeah, that's pretty proper, because it's, yeah, we knew the talent was not going to be as good as the NFL, but some of the things they're doing, even if, let's just say for right now, we're talking about in the game and the rules in and of itself, we can get to the broadcast as we go along here, but it was passable enough talent to where everything else about it stayed intriguing, and it kept me with it. I don't know about you, but like you mentioned before, you expected for like what, watch a series or two and be like, okay, I'm out.
Yeah, like, oh, this is not real football. These guys are not ready to play, and the product and the presentation of, well, ESPN didn't do it justice. But no, I was in. Like, I was expecting to watch for an hour, and I watched until I had to bounce. I was, like, enthralled with the storylines, how they presented the game, how they're interviewing people in the middle of the game.
Yeah.
How I know that that's going to be a disaster eventually.
Oh, it, of course.
I mean, F-bombs flying early when Diana Rossini is asking the center after he messed up and did a personal foul. Hey, what happened there?
He's like, what happened?
I don't know. There's just a lot of chatter after a play. We're trying to make some stuff happen, and they're doing a little extra pushing and shoving. We're trying to get our job done.
Yeah. See, that's could you imagine being, see, like, I, of course, I think of it from like an our job perspective. And of course, Herb and mine's primary job is producing. So I'm thinking, when you have the guy whose finger is on the dump button, has got to be, once they go to a sideline interview, be like, oh God, oh crap, oh crap, oh crap, oh God, there it is. Okay. And then you just have to pray that they cut away from the guy real quick, because there's only so much you can do there.
I know the TV, they're probably trying to go live, or maybe they're going 2-3 seconds, because eventually that dump button guy got it in that interview, and the sound just went off. But I couldn't imagine. I remember, you know, Mitch is our boss. I couldn't imagine the Mitch of that. Like, hey, come on, what the hell are you guys doing?
Right.
What's the dump button? And it's like, what do you mean? It's live.
Yeah, and with so many players mic'd up, coaches mic'd up, and that's really a big part of it too. But just for to set the scene for everybody, for those that really didn't tune in until yesterday, just run down some of the rules and what made it different, like on the field. Because the first thing, the kickoff, was jarring. It was jarring the first time you look at it. So you have the kicking team. That kicker is back normally at the 30-yard line as per usual, what you would see. Now it's the other 10 guys on the kicking team and the non-returner guys on the receiving team that are lined up. The kicking team is at the opponent's 35. The receiving team's 10 guys are lined up at the opponent 30. And then the returner is lined up at about the 10 or something. And the rule is it has to go deeper than the 20. Otherwise, along with if the ball's kicked out of bounds, it goes to the plus 45. So where in the NFL, kickoff out of bounds, ball goes to the 40, your own 40 as the receiving team, it goes an extra 15 yards further. So it makes it even more egregious, which I think is great. And having the barrier of the 20-yard line as well, it's just going to be so interesting to see how the strategy develops over time. Because when you think about the high-speed collisions, and that's the reason that the kickoff's being kind of legislated out of the game, and not being able to start moving until the ball is caught by the returner, or what is it, like 2 or 3 seconds after it hits the ground, it takes out a lot of the velocity of those hits, but you can also still get a decent return because it's not like you have waves of players. You have one line, and if you can bust through that line, in theory, you're out. You're gone.
Yeah, and I don't think this promotes kickoff returns, like a long one.
Right. More often than it's going to be a lot harder, but I think with time, we're probably going to see the strategy change a little bit here and there and say, have them be like, oh, receiving teams be like, okay, well, I see that it seems like everybody's pretty much going straight up man on man. Maybe they work to, I don't know exactly what it would be, but if we could just double team one guy and create just a little bit of a seam, maybe you can get there.
The thing is with kickoff returns and when my experience with kickoff returns, the thing that happens with the long returns is when somebody is undisciplined and gets out of their lane.
Yes.
If guys who are at the 35 are just going 10 yards, the lane discipline is pretty easy to stay.
Sure.
It's the problem when you're at your own 30 and you're running down and then you see the kicker, I mean, the returner down the field on the other side of the field. So you lose lane integrity and start creeping on to the other side. That would create a hole for the kick returner to cut it back.
Yeah.
The fact that they're so close, lane integrity will be more solid and more sound, so it won't promote a lot of long kickoff returns. It has to be one guy on the kickoff team making an egregious mistake.
Sure.
If I'm a special teams coach right there, I'm just saying, go straight. Go straight into your defender, hold him up, shed him when it happens, because he's coming right there towards you. With the 10 men on the field, there's really no room to maneuver between other guys. If guys keep their lane integrity, it's going to be very easy to stop the kickoff returner.
And one thing you just said right there is I think what's interesting and could be part of the strategy involved is, I forget who I saw tweet it yesterday, but it was like an X's and O's guy. I might have been Arif Hassan from The Athletic who brought up maybe you have them start, like the people that are going to be on your kickoff coverage unit, maybe they start doing a lot of your defensive line or front seven drills. You brought up stacking and shedding. So that's essentially hold your guy up, try and control him with your hands, and then when you see which way the returner commits, you shed that, you toss the guy off in the other direction so you can be in that gap and make the tackle. Or even the thought of maybe the kickoff coverage unit tries to run some stunts similar to a defensive line or really a front seven, you could say it like that, and try and shoot some of those gaps as well if they want to be more aggressive, if they see something on film. It's just like going through all these rules, and we'll get to some of the other ones as we go here. It's fascinating to think of the extra strategy that could be involved.
And the one time that we did see a decent kickoff return was in the Houston-LA game in the second quarter, and I know, Herb, you were at the Blackfire soccer event.
Shout out.
So you didn't see it. but it was a play where the ball bounced in front of the returner and they were going after the ball. And that was you talking about undisciplined. They got undisciplined. They started looking for the ball. Lane opened up, and I think he returned it about like 50 yards past the 50 to their 40.
Yeah, I saw one other return where a guy just straight tried to break it outside and got to about his own 40. But really, considering what the NFL kickoff is right now, I think I would rather see what they did yesterday than, hey, just take the ball at the 25 and start first and 10. Like, I appreciated that aspect of
it. The one thing I know that the NFL is going to do is take some of these rules that the XFL is instituting and apply them to their game. Mm-hmm. Maybe not the miking up of the coaches and quarterbacks. That's dangerous. That's a rule I'm not a fan of. As a football guy, I don't need to know what they're doing, because Greg McElroy, the analyst on the first game, was like, he heard the call. He's like, okay, that's a run to the right. I know that, I hear it. That's a run to the right. And if Greg McElroy knows that, guess who else knows that?
Yeah.
Every player on that football field. There's going to be a time where an opposing team's going to have one guy, and he's going to be like, okay, they're running this out of this formation. Get him, because he's got to say it. The coach has to say it. McElroy has to say it to the huddle. By that time, you can relay what that call is to the middle linebacker, and the middle linebacker can get right back to everybody else. Play to the. It's going to run to the left. Run to the left, guys. Stack that side. Yeah, you could do audibles.
Sure.
But at that time, you know their audible calls too, because they're mic'd up. After this first game, people are going to have a tape on DC defenders, and they're going to have all the calls of the DC defenders. And then if you're doing audibles, like, okay, I got that. You're audibling to run to the left.
I don't feel like there was a lot of audibling yesterday. And mind you, part of that, as some of the players that were interviewed mentioned, is they haven't had a whole lot of time to be together, and they also have no tape on the other team, so it was pretty much just focus on your own team doing what you do. And I wonder if there are maybe, you know, behind closed doors rules about that, of just like, maybe they have to put that out there for people like us that are wondering some of the logistics of just saying, hey, we're going to have people making sure that there's no shenanigans going on either up in your booth or in your locker room or whatever it is.
If a coach doesn't do this, I'm very disappointed. I don't like cheating, but I know NFL coaches and I know coaches. To gain an advantage on that, especially on a game that's pretty much brand new, burgeoning game, they're going to have somebody that's going to be relaying calls. I don't know if they have the microphones like the NFL has it for the middle linebacker, but I assume they do for defensive calls. That's happening. I would like to see that scaled back, the live mic of the coach. I don't need to hear the play. I never had an interest in that, really, as a spectator.
Yeah.
I don't know why it's enthralling. Is it enthralling to you? Is it enthralling to you who are listening, that you get to know what the players are learning, what the call is, what the formations are? I know 12 personnel was brought out there a lot, 21 personnel, Greg McElroy teaching you as you watch the game. I kind of like for the fans, but I don't need to know the call. It's going to be a part where they're going to be cheating available for every coach, every player in that league, and I hope they scale that back.
Z motion is solo right nasty. Key Osborne balloon. Osborne.
Yeah, like one thing that I find interesting from a production standpoint, the audio guy. Because normally in a truck, there's one, at least from my limited experience on the TV side, there is one person that kind of handles the master levels of each individual source of audio.
Yes.
And 100% understandably, there were times yesterday where they wanted to have the play call kind of in the background while still giving a guy like Greg McElroy some room to do some analysis. And just the levels were kind of off. But that's one thing that's just straight going to come with time. There are other rules that are different that we saw some effect of that we want to get to here. 312-644-6767. 670-11 on the text line. Want to know which of the new rules you liked the best, and what intrigued you most, and what kept you at the TV for maybe longer than you thought with the XFL, or if you still weren't interested. We want to know how you consume the XFL and just your kind of thoughts on it as a whole, because I think it's pretty intriguing. Herb and I were pleasantly surprised, but we want to know what you're thinking next. He's Herb Lawrence. I'm Rick Camp. We're talking XFL with you now, probably until the top of the hour on the score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Walker, whip time, takes the shot. Cam Phillips, caught, touchdown, Renegades. And this week, if you're a Houston Roughneck fan.
Highlight from Fox, that's Kurt Menefee. Boy, the June Jones offense was back in full throw. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Does your youth hockey team want to play in front of thousands? Make it happen with the Chicago Wolves Youth Hockey Program presented by Kia. Visit chicagowolves.com/youthhockey to learn more. He's Herb Lawrence, I'm Rick Camp. We're here with you until noon talking about the first day of the XFL right now. And, you know, it is one day, and I think probably the biggest test for the viability of the league is going to be week two, week three, once it starts to be more in the bloodstream and you know, it's not as much of a novelty. But we're going through some of the rules right now and wanting your thoughts at 312-644-6767, 670-11 on the text line. So before we go over a couple more rules, let's go out to Ron, who's in Hawthorne Woods. Ron, you're on the score. Hey, Ron. Hey, Ron.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
How are you?
Good.
Good. I want to weigh in on a couple of the rules. Number one, I love the 1 foot in bounds catch because that's a more organic transition from scholastic, collegiate, into pro football. I think it will bring a higher scoring brand of the game, and I really like that part. The other part I liked was the points after touchdown, the 1, 2, and 3 points. You know, if they – you know, it's high risk, low risk. You know, if they want to go for the 3 points, there's a reward. But also it kind of serves as a 12th man on the field for the defense. So there is a lot of nuances that play into that. And the last thing, I really think that, you know, if this XFL serves as some kind of a feeder program for the NFL and it really gets some appeal for the masses, that maybe someday, I don't know how it would work, but someday they would have kind of like a minor league that the XFL would serve as a feeder program to each NFL team in the NFL.
All right, Ron, really appreciate the call. And yeah, I do think that's interesting because it also, the 1, 2, or 3 points that you can get for a point after touchdown is that it keeps teams in games longer because you saw at certain points being down 12, you know, it was just moving the target from 10 or 11 to keeping it a two-score game to 12 because then you still had the possibility of a 9-point touchdown with the, and for those that are not in doctrine and didn't have the chance to see it yesterday, the 1 point is from the 3-yard line, the 2 point is from the 5-yard line, and the 3 point is from the 10-yard line. Now, Herb, were you surprised at how many times teams were going for the one? Because for me, even just knowing the distances, I would think there's immediate value with the 2-pointer at the 5-yard line. And I could understand, unless you really need to, maybe not going for the 3-pointer every single time because it's needing 10 yards instead of literally half as much for only half of the extra point total.
I think that these are football guys, so we're indoctrinated into the old school thinking of,
especially a lot of these coaches,
exactly.
Jim Zorn, June Jones, those type of guys.
So the conservative nature of going for one, but a lot of people have told me who've played football, being closer is harder to score, especially if you're passing,
right?
More defenders available in the end zone, less ground to cover.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would probably go for the two. more than likely. And if I was a coach, the three is there. Let's take it. Let's put step in some throats.
Yeah, exactly. If you have a play that you really, really like that can get you 10 yards, because when you think about it just logically, there are more plays that are designed to get 5 yards than there are to get 10 yards. So I would think the 5 yard. I think if I was a coach, of course, pending personnel and all that stuff, I would probably go for the two-pointer more often than not.
Yeah.
Because it's only 5 yards. So, and at that point, it just seems value. I'm trying to think value-wise, like maybe not. I'm not the best with all of your game theory stuff, but when I'm thinking 1 point is 3 yards and 5 yards for 2 points, you're getting a little bit, you're getting that third of a point value. And then to go back double the distance, you're only getting half reward going for 3 points at the 10 yard line. I think the value is most there in the two-pointer every single time as your default. Now, obviously, it's almost like bunting, where it's if you
bunting
score,
cups.
Yeah, if you score and you only need 1 point to win at the very end of the game or something, then sure, go for the 1 point if you've got the good play for it. Just like with bunting, if it's the bottom of the ninth and you only need one or something and you have a first guy get a double, then I could understand bunting a guy over to third or something
like
that.
But Tom Tangle says that's the wrong move anyways.
Well, sure. But
your better percentage of score is hitting the ball away.
Yeah.
When you have a guy on second. It's better to have one out and guy on, or no outs with a guy on second than to have one out with a guy on third.
Yeah. I guess there's more situational aspect to it, more or less.
But to speak to this point as far as a minor league system, mm-hmm. This would be perfect. And guys who have washed out of the NFL, you saw Raheem Moore.
Yep.
You saw, Jason Elam? No, that's the kicker.
Matt Elam.
They're former NFL players who washed out of the league for one reason or another, trying to regain some eyes. Okay, that man can still play. Now he's in a structure that I can see him play, and he's playing at a high level. Cardale Jones, okay. We really didn't see him play in Buffalo or San Diego. Let's get him into our camp and see what he's learned from the D.C. Defenders and the guys down there, Pep Hamilton, who's a former NFL offensive coordinator himself, mm-hmm. He's developed him into a player that we can maybe use as a backup quarterback. I would take a flyer on him if I was the Bears. And this is the league that needs to buddy up with the NFL and say, we're here for you. They have only eight teams now with a proposed ninth. I would love to see, you know, if they have eight teams, 32 teams in the NFL, each team gets like, XFL team gets four players.
Yeah.
Or four teams. Like the Bears go to here, the Browns go here, the Saints go here, and then another team goes mm-hmm. here. And these are your feeder system players.
Right.
So this is what you're rooting for as a Chicago fan. You're rooting for the DC Defenders. Or if we get a Chicago team.
Right. That's what's interesting too. And part of what I want to get to, maybe we'll do that more later in the show, is how to make this viable long term. And the questions that we still have looking at this is more than just a 1 week, 2 week thing. I think the biggest thing aspect of it is that Vince McMahon has as much money as he does and whatever, you know, money he's gotten other people investing for it. They have enough capital for 3 years at the current structure, mind you. So if, let's say, after this year it's successful and for sake of argument, they want to expand to 12 teams, that would probably mean they would need to dip into the revenue sooner, but still having the 3 years. And if what Darren Revelle reported yesterday, that the XFL already has more revenue than the AAF did in its entire existence, that's great. That's obviously gives them more viability long term, and it's just like a snowball effect of then more people be more willing to get involved and all that kind of stuff.
It was smart on their part to partner with ESPN, because you 100%. Now see on their ESPN.com, XFL is on the rundown. It's on the top page.
Sure.
Like, AAF, you didn't know about that. They partnered with CBS Sports Network.
Right.
No one watches that garbage.
No.
ESPN, Fox, they're in bed with real people who are going to be broadcasting. And this time, in the iteration of the XFL, they didn't do the JR doing play-by-play type
sure.
of thing. They got Steve Levy, not necessarily a play-by-play guy, does it often, but Right. Not the guy you think of when you think about play-by-play.
Exactly. They got names that people know that are still broadcasters that at least have enough chops to where they don't have prior obligations
love
already.
Love Tom Luganville. Love his sideline reporting. Not necessarily a fan of what Diana Rossini did, but she's a viable reporter.
Absolutely.
I didn't see the second game, but Kurt Menefee.
Oh, and then they had a great moment with Brock Huard on the sideline. So North Carolina's finest, Elijah Hood, hurdles a defender, and it was right by Brock Huard. Like, he was in the background when they showed the other angle, like from the deep middle. You saw Brock Huard when Elijah Hood is leaping a defender, see him pull back and go, oh, and they went back to him and had him look at a monitor of the replay of it. And it was just like a great fun moment to where it's also like, yeah, this isn't the NFL, but it's still that the athleticism these guys have is pretty absurd.
Yeah, they got talent. It wasn't bad football, as I said. Mm-hmm. Maybe they need to be ramped up a little bit more. I didn't necessarily think that these guys were ready for the NFL, but you could tell the talent's just below that, and that's fine. Give me football. Give me competitive football. For the most part, the first XFL iteration was like, it's football, but it's also wrestling. We're going to do it sports entertainment, like that type of thing. This is like, okay, we're doing a little rules different, but at the end of the day, this is American football. Who's going to win? And that's what the XFL needs to be. NFL has long needed a minor league system.
Yeah.
And just for bodies in general, because of the breakdown of people. And this could be one of those things. Hopefully in the future, the NFL sees this as a partner, not as a rival.
312-644-6767, 670-11 on the text line. Wanting your thoughts on what you saw from the XFL, what you liked and what you didn't like. Alex is in Morris, and he's on the score.
Hello. Love you guys. Love your show.
Thanks.
I agree with previous caller what he said. I think that would be really cool. I also liked the kickoffs. Mm-hmm. I thought they were a lot more safe, and it was an interesting kind of twist to the kickoffs, and I kind of enjoy listening to what the coaches say.
Why is that, Alex?
As a football fan, I enjoy football, and like also like if, when they call timeout, you can hear what the coach is saying to the players. I think I really like that, and I enjoy listening to that. Just want to hear your thoughts.
Love your suit.
It's the thing I'm looking forward to the most today, because former Bears coach is going to be mic'd up.
Mark Trestman microphone is scary.
Believe at, what is it, at 1 o'clock today, Mark Trestman's Vipers will go to... This is another problem that the XFL will have eventually. We saw the two games yesterday. It was in D.C. in a soccer stadium.
Yes.
And in L.A. or in Houston in a soccer stadium, too. 40,000 was the capacity. Today, Trestman's Vipers will go to New York to face the Guardians. They're going to be playing in a real NFL stadium. 70,000 Giants Stadium.
Yeah, there's going to be some empty seats.
This is the problem. Yesterday's presentation, fans looked... and interested. The stadiums were full. Today, hearing Mark Trestman on audio, I'm looking forward to it. I know me, you, Tanny are all looking forward to cutting up and replaying stuff for Monday's
shows.
We're
going to be busy.
But I wonder how New York feels about it. They already have two NFL teams. This is a lesser league. They barely fill up those stadiums for Jets and Giants games. Well, Jets games, I think they get the full capacity, but Giants are... lesser team right now.
Yeah.
What's going to be the presentation? Are they only going to be showing the lower bowl? And is that still going to be empty? And then Mark Trestman. Oh my God. Please, Mark Trestman, please put a mic on Jerry Glanville, who is the defensive coordinator of that Vipers team.
That's why it's just so
give
different.
Me the microphone for those two guys, no one else. And I'm going to be cutting up tape for the rest of the night. It's going to be so great.
Yeah, I can't wait for that aspect. When we come back, you might not be there for the coach-player mic'd up interaction, but there's another interaction between two people that are involved in this game that I want to get to that I think was awesome and I think is going to benefit the XFL. And I would hope that it's one of those things the NFL adopts as well.
I'm intrigued.
We'll tell you what that is when we come back. He's Herb Lawrence. I'm Rick Camp. We're here with you until noon. At the top of the hour, we'll switch over to the White Sox and speak with James Fox from Future Sox. But right now, we're on the XFL on the Score.
Some of you don't care. You just want as many replays as you can get. Some of you are asphyxiated with replays and just want as many as you can get.
Less is awesome.
I'm trying to figure out asphyxiate. If you said the word right, it still doesn't work.
Yeah. I don't know what he was going for there, but you know what? When you're on at that time, pretty much you let a lot of things
slide. Asphyxiated with replay.
Choking with replay.
I mean, I say words wrong too all the time.
Yeah,
so whatever.
Same here. I mean,
whatever.
He's Herb Lawrence. I'm Rick Camp. We're here with you until noon at the top of the hour. We'll switch over to some White Sox talk with James Fox from Future Sox. We're talking about the XFL, and I mentioned there's one aspect of it, one interaction that I was fascinated with and liked the way it was presented, and that was replay and how the replay was used on the broadcast. So this is from Seattle and D.C., the first game of the day, and it was about a first down spot after a catch on the sideline. So let's listen into how the interaction from the replay official being mic'd up went with the actual referee.
Ball carrier was down short of the line to gain. It's under further review.
He's clearly past the four.
That's Seattle's
ball.
Tell
me when you're there, Reggie.
Stick around. All right, we've got Seattle's game ball on the field still.
Okay.
I'm ready when you are.
All right. His forward progress, when he gets driven back, he's probably a half a yard past the four-yard line.
This is the replay.
So three and a half.
He's under three and a half. Then he gets driven back to the four. So put the ball on the 3.5-yard line. If that requires a measurement, do it. If not, it's a first down.
No, the four-yard line was the line to gain.
And he went past that.
He went past it. We're going to have a first down.
Yeah, 3.5, and then it's it. Because he... Yeah. Okay.
You good with that?
Hang on with me. Want to look one more shot?
Yep.
Yeah. He's well past it. 3.5 is fine.
All right. After further review, it's been determined that the ball carrier's forward progress ended at the 3.5-yard line. The line to gain was the 4-yard line. Therefore, it's first down and goal, Seattle.
I thought that was fascinating, Herb. Like, to get to hear that interaction and even just like the thought process of the replay official as he's going through it.
Yeah, very much so. I was asking for this for baseball, and finally they're doing it this year where they're letting the umpires announce what the call was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're going to get into the New York studios and say, hey, get access to what the replay official's thinking, but I thought it was great. It was engaging, and one of the replay challenges was the replay official saying, it's third down, right? I would think that the replay official would know that.
Yeah.
I was later in the game when the guy needed to gain to the 4-yard line, and he was like asking the referee, it's third down, correct?
Yeah.
It's like, you're the replay official. You're supposed to be keeping tabs. I got other stuff to keep tabs on, like
right.
Holding and offsides and such. But yeah, it's a fascinating look, and that's access that I do want.
Right, because if there's one thing that a lot of people are skeptical of, including Les, it's replays, how much time they take, and how they come to their conclusions, especially when it's one that we may disagree with without having that kind of interaction. I think that's really important, and I think that's something that could be really useful that the NFL could implement, even if it's not as all access as that. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what the middle ground would be, but I think that would go a long way into, if nothing else, making the time spent on a review feel not as long, because right now we're just kind of in the lurch. The analysts are in the lurch as well, just wondering what the heck's going on. It's part of the reason they have their own their own referees alongside to try and help make that time not feel like it's taking so long on these reviews.
And replay in general, and I think Jesse Agler, the Padres broadcaster, brought this up. Replay should be what did you see? Give me the call.
Yes.
Not the play was called as such on the field. Where that's going to be the overriding 100% thing unless you see something different.
Mm-hmm.
I need the replay guy to just say, I don't know what the call on the field was, or at least not go back to that and say, what did you see? Tell me what you saw. Okay, he got the yards to gain.
Right.
Cool. If you saw that, smooth. Give me a time limit for him to see that.
Mm-hmm.
And if he doesn't see that, tell me what he did see, and we'll go by what the replay official saw on the TV screen that he's looking at, and that will be the determining factor, not the call on the field. Because the call on the field,
right,
it messes the replay official up. He has a guideline he has to go by. Now he has to disprove or find something else to officiate on. Mm-hmm. I just want the replay official to be like, I know he's human, so he's watching the game, and he probably has biases already.
Sure.
But I want him to go into it and just say, hey, this is what I saw. This is what the play should be.
Exactly. And one thing to clarify for everybody, there's no coach's challenge in the XFL because every play is subject to review, should it be deemed as such, by the replay official.
Yes. And
which is great because that saves time because you're not waiting there for a coach to try and wait to see if he's getting, you know, an indication from his guy in the booth. That's the replay guy. Maybe you should challenge it. Okay, wait, go for it. Like, you don't have that. It's just the replay official does that himself, buzzes down. Okay. Like, it feels like a much more efficient process.
And you got to have people who are impartial. That'd be great if they just, hey, ring down when you think there's a special play without interrupting the game flow too much.
Sure.
There are plays that need to be reviewed by people who are impartial, and I don't think coaches are enough. You know, they have a guy up in the booth saying, oh, okay, let's do it. Just have a guy up in the booth and say, if he can do it, if he can buzz down quick enough and stop the play from happening, cool. If he can't, game goes on.
312-644-6767-6711 on the text line. As well, the text zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. One more aspect that we want to get to before we have to take another time out is the timing. Now, throughout a vast majority of the halves, before you hit the two-minute warning,
okay,
a lot more running clock. So if, let's say, there's an incompletion or a guy gets tackled out and goes out of bounds, the clock stops until the ball is spotted. Once the ball is spotted by the special referee, which only focuses on spotting the ball, the guy in the red hat, once that ball is spotted, the clock runs again. So it saves a little bit of time, which I'm fine with because of how they utilize that time. In the two-minute offense, once a play, even if it's a play that stays in bounds, let's say a team runs a draw trying to catch the defensive line going too far upfield, 5-yard gain, the clock will stop. The ball will be spotted. And then once the ball is spotted and they start the clock again, they also take the game clock. They take 5 seconds off of the play clock just to try and speed it up. So it gives more opportunities for plays in the 2 minutes. And then just kind of as a logistical thing, these guys haven't been practicing too much with each other. So it gives them more of an avenue to either huddle or take a little bit longer to get their plays out when they don't know each other that well, and still allow there to be more scoring opportunities in the final 2 minutes of a half.
That's one thing the XFL understands, that offense rules the day, and you need more offense, and you need offense to drive fans, especially younger fans. No one wants to see these defensive battles 6-0, 6-3.
Right.
They want to promote offense as much as they can. So this does promote offense. It allows teams to relax, not be in a hurried mode. I think the NFL should adopt this immediately, especially the one where under 2 minutes you get tackled inbounds, clock stops. They run 5 seconds off the play clock once the ball is set, and then the game clock starts.
Yeah.
Perfect. It works so on so many levels, and it's a more enjoyable experience. It's not hurried. It's not mistake-prone. It's more offensively geared to them.
Yeah, and there's still going to be timing issues with the – like you saw it. What was it? Winston Moss was not happy at the end of a first half when there was a little bit of a timing issue getting up to the line of scrimmage and trying to get a field goal off right before the half. There's a penalty, so they have the 10-second runoff when there were 11 seconds on the clock. So they knew they had to be ready to go. Like Nick Novak, I remember, was the kicker, and he made sure he was already walked himself off and ready to go. Mm-hmm. But so they, and the ref said, the clock runs. Once I blow the ball into play, the whistle goes, and the long snapper didn't snap it right away. Mm. He didn't snap it immediately, and I think it was one of the other offensive linemen went right up to the long snapper and looked like he wanted to kill him. So because they didn't get the field goal opportunity off.
It should. He knew the rules. He knew what was going down. And, you know, he knew you need to snap it right then. And he struggled. I want to see that. I want to see the interaction between the players on the sidelines to see the MFing, the, hey, get your play together.
Yeah.
The guy who got the recovery that one time for the touch or for the pump block.
Yes.
He missed the subsequent kickoff. Because he was doing an interview with Diana Rossini. I want to see that.
Yes.
And then I think the defensive coach is like, hey, man, you're doing an interview. You're supposed to be on the play.
Right.
He's like, man, I can get there every day, time.
Yeah,
man.
That might be a logistical thing that they kind of have to work out, too. There's going to be some ironing of things.
Yeah, because they got the touchdown. They went to break. And so Diana Rossini's there for 3 minutes with the guy just waiting for them to come back. And he's like, okay, I got to do things, but also thank you for giving me this break because I'm tired as hell.
All right, we're going to switch over and talk about some baseball. We'll get back to the XFL at 11 o'clock with Kevin Boylard of CBS Sports. Before we take our time out, just as a way to transition to baseball, Ken Rosenthal is confirming John Heyman's initial report that there is still progress in the Betts deal, including the Twins still being involved. So we'll keep our eyes on that, see if that gets finalized before we get out of here at noon. But James Fox is going to come on from Future Sox and talk about the White Sox as pitchers and catchers are about to report. The Sox are doing some things over this weekend in terms of lining things up for international signings for July 2. He's Herb Lawrence. I'm Rick Camp. We are here with you until noon on The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.